You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Welcome everyone back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, and I am joined on this Friday morning by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
Hi, Dave.
You seem great. You seem tremendous.
That was something.
That was something else.
What was worse, that game?
Or
Pittsburgh, the Sun Bowl.
That game.
Yeah.
Sun Bowl, relevant. Who cares? It's a bowl game. Nobody gives a shit.
Well, I know, but it kind of left you with a bad taste in the way it happened. And
totally. Yeah. But last game actually mattered in a fundamental way. And they played a lot worse. I mean, the Sun Bowl, you know, they gave it away at the end, the whole thing. But this one, it wasn't luck. It wasn't. So Arizona, you could explain it away. So we've got two games to talk about because we didn't talk about Arizona either. But I think these two kind of go hand in hand, because Arizona, you can explain away. They shot horribly, but they played pretty good defense. They held a really good offense to 58 points and just couldn't buy a shot. So that's easy. That fits the ethos. That fits the mold of UCLA under Mick Cronin. You can say, oh well, they missed shots, but they still played really good defense and had a chance to win despite the fact that they shot, you know, basically had one of their worst shooting nights of his tenure. USC, neither of the USC games are explained that way. There's a reason Mick Cronin was super pissed after the 2-point win over USC 2 weeks ago in Pauley, and this one was essentially the exact same game, except UCLA quit even harder in the second half. I mean, the level of intensity and effort was the kind of oscillating intensity and effort you saw in the first half of his first year last night. It was shockingly bad in the second half. The lack of focus offensively, the number of just horrible sloppy passes. It was just a completely woeful effort and completely woeful level of focus. And I thought it was really interesting. And this goes to people not really understanding how to read Mick, because he didn't go in on the team last night. And I think that's the point at which, if I'm a member of the team, I get scared, because he's saving it for practice, because there's no way he watched that game and said, oh, we just got beat by a good team. They allowed themselves to get beaten. USC came out of the locker room with the exact same level of intensity and effort they came out of the locker room at Pauley in the second half. And UCLA, like, semi-sort of responded at different points in that second half. They never responded in this game. Even when it got close again, it had almost nothing to do with UCLA's effort. It was everything to do with USC taking bad shots. This was, I think, for my money, it was the worst game they've played this year, and one of the worst halves they've played in a long, long time. And that, you know, we've watched a lot of bad halves this January with all the shooting woes. This was the worst one by far.
Yeah, it was the worst, easily the worst game for me. I kind of threw off the two early losses in December as, you know, just growing pains. This one was tough. We're still a long ways away. You know, we got a ways to go until we're at the NCAA tournament. But it's interesting to try to analyze why the effort and focus just trailed off so badly in that second half. And they are getting it's the dog days of the season. You're sludging through this right now. They're tired, hasn't used an extensive bench. So the starters are, Jalen Clark, his signature shot, easily a signature shot is that little floater.
It's officially not a slump. It is a funk.
I mean, he has not made that shot. I mean, he's gotten his own offensive rebound and put it back in, but he has not made that shot now.
And it's easily in over a month. If he was missing that shot all day, but he was still playing defense and not playing, because here's the thing: it's not just that he's missing the shots offensively; it's that he's getting a little bit more selfish because he's trying to get in a rhythm. But that one jump hook he took after the offensive rebound, where he looks to the perimeter, sees some open guys, but says, "No, I'm going to take this back up," and then misses it again, got him pulled. He can't be making those kinds of plays and then turning it over. The amount of times that he's been cutting and the other guy passes to where he was, or he attends to pass it and the other guy starts cutting, he's out of sync with the other guys. And it's infecting his defense too. As soon as he came back in after Mick benched him after the bad jump hook, he does this unnecessary help off of his guy to help Tiger, who doesn't switch to Jalen's guy until way too late, leading to an easy bucket. It's infecting everything that he's missing shots, which is so interesting because a few weeks ago, Cronin talked after one of the games and he said there's a few guys on the team, it doesn't matter if they miss a shot, they'll keep playing their game. And he cited David Singleton and Jalen Clark, two of the guys who I think have been very much affected by their shot not going in the last couple of weeks. It's really interesting and weird to see that happen. But no, Clark isn't playing well on either end right now.
And then even though Jaime Jaquez led the team with 15 points, he's still not really that go-to guy that you need to get a bucket right now. You just don't feel greatly confident he's going to get that bucket.
He goes through these stretches though every single year, where it just looks like he's. I don't want to say going through the motions because I wouldn't say he played like a. He didn't play like a low effort game. It's just with the way he plays and the way his body is and the way his game is. He needs to be playing with like 90-95% intensity at all times. And so when he plays his 80% intensity game, it just doesn't work for him. He needs to be playing hard all the time. And that's really hard. That's difficult to do. But defensively, he was not getting deflections. He was not playing aggressively in the way that he needs to. It hurt that USC was attacking UCLA's switches a lot. UCLA was unnecessarily switching a lot. And so he often ended up on smaller players. There were a few, bad plays on Boogie, as pretty much everyone had. But then offensively, I didn't hate what he was intending to do, but you can't turn it over like that. He was getting doubled and tripled a lot, so he's passing. That's good. You just can't pass to the other team three times, which he did. It was just, it was a sloppy, unfocused game, and no one really stepped up. I mean, I would say the guy who stepped up the most was Amari Bailey, who played shockingly well for having sat out, basically a month of practice and games. But nobody else played well. Nobody else stepped up. But Adem Bona had a nice first half, and then in the second half, he was kind of the leader of the unfocused.
I guess what the biggest worry here, in the other games when they've gone cold, they can't find their offense, whatever, offensive slump. They've been able to be competitive in a game, even against Arizona down the stretch, because they played decent defense. The defense was bad in the second half.
Horrible.
Bad. I mean, so many open looks, just no intensity, and just breakdowns right and left. I haven't been worried really about this team yet this season. I mean, they've only lost four games, so. But there have been times, you know, they've had to come back to win games. So there have been times probably where you might be able to worry. I haven't. Now this was worrisome. USC, to its credit, is not a great matchup for UCLA. USC is a good defensive team when they play defense. And that can stop, good defensive teams can stop down UCLA's offense. And when UCLA's offense, I think it kind of is a chain reaction. UCLA's offense then can't create a basket. And then I think, as anyone will tell you that's close to basketball, if you're not able to put the ball in the basket consistently throughout a game, it eventually affects your defense. They just can't keep holding up that spinning dish. I tweeted this during the game, and I kind of really do believe it. And we could talk about this because I know at the beginning of the season I agreed with you about Tiger Campbell. You know, when Mick Cronin, I don't know if he actually said it, but he wanted him to channel his Steph Curry.
He said it like five times.
Five times, yeah. I do believe the guy who I trust to put the ball in the basket most often is Tiger Campbell on the scene. They have to be – what happens when the offense shuts down, and this is what USC did in the second half both times. So Tiger gets his ball screen, he comes off, and usually UCLA will do some stuff. They'll either actually hard screen, they'll show the screen, they'll do all the stuff to confuse the defenders off of that pick, and then Tiger is able to do whatever he needs to get open. That step back, hit a three, go into the lane, pull up. USC completely defended that really well, but that is their most reliable shot on this team by far, is Tiger Campbell taking a few bounces, getting into the lane at about 15 feet and shooting. I don't know what else is as reliable.
I guess my overarching thing is too much. I think a big focus on our message board right now is the offense. A big focus is, you know, how do they get scoring? They allowed 1.28 points per possession in this game. In a 60 possession game, they allowed 77 points. It doesn't matter if Tiger Campbell scored 25 in this game. They weren't winning.
Yeah, but what I'm saying though is, when they cannot manufacture a basket, it eventually will break down your defense.
I mean, to an extent, but the manufacturing, the isolation scoring wasn't, they weren't even getting to that point. They weren't getting shots off because they kept turning the ball over. It's not, the one guy on the team who really struggled putting the ball in the basket was Jalen Clark. Everyone else shot more or less okay. David Singleton missed a lot, and he got blocked on one, which was kind of sad to see. But he hit 4 of 9 from three. Everyone else shot okay. It's just they turned the ball over a ton. Tiger turned it over 4 times. Dembona and Jaime each turned it over 3 times. They had 13 turnovers in a 60-possession game. You do that, it doesn't matter if you're ISO scoring or not. You can't play that sloppy. Jalen Clark is the one who I would say, if he can't start shooting at a higher clip, if it's going to infect his defense this way, I don't know that he can start anymore. Because it's just, it creates this dead spot on the floor. Where it's just, if you're playing 4-on-5 against an athletic defense like USC has, there's just too much length everywhere, and if they don't really have to pay attention to that guy, it's good night.
I mean, and that's what it's hard to narrow this down, and you don't want to just single out one person, but he went 0 for 7 and he scored 3 points. So if I'm going with my theory, you're losing your second best scorer. And then you take that away. So now who's putting the ball in the basket? And then they are expending so much energy on offense, trying to create a good look, that it wears down their ability to play defense. So right,
I guess my point is,
I don't want to just blame him, but yeah, that this is a big thing.
Yeah.
That Jalen Clark needs to step up.
Well, and so I don't want to hit it too hard, but people want to make a claim that there's an offensive problem. And here's where, like, I struggle with this a little bit, because Jalen Clark was hitting those bunnies, those floaters, those runners, whatever you want to call his little one-handed shot, at an exceptionally high clip in November and December. Really, really, really high clip. He was hitting it at almost 50%. In January, it's now got to be under 25% after this showing, because I think all 5 of his misses from 2 were those little floaters. It's got to be under 25% now. Is this more what he is from that range, or is it more of what we saw in November and December?
Well, they played against worse competition in November, December.
But if you go back through his historical record, he's never been this bad with his touch around the basket. He's generally been good from two-point land. But he's in a hellacious slump. And normally when you're talking about slumps, you're thinking three-pointers. You're thinking, you know, the long-range shots. He's in an insane slump from about 6 feet out. He cannot hit those shots, and it feels like it's a mental block at this point. But you can't have that. Like, he's those 7 misses are almost turnovers with how automatic the miss shot is. They can't continue to do that. Yeah. And that's probably the biggest worry for me from January, is how lost his offense has gotten, and now with this game, how much it infected his defense.
So the big discussion, you know, is this a Final Four team? Well, we're in late January, so much is different in March. Does it look like one? Well, of course not. But there's a lot of growth for this team that could happen. And if you look around and watch a lot of teams, everyone is either losing or sneaking by in the top 10 and not particularly looking great. It's not like there are 2 or 3 incredible teams that you would just say are locks for the Final Four. So it's everyone shouldn't cast off this team. I think they're still easily one of the top 8 teams in the country, wouldn't you say?
No doubt.
Yeah.
Zero question about it. So
that gives them an absolute chance to make a run in the tournament in March. Everyone's the way the NCAA tournament, it is, if you get to the final, it's 6 games, and you can be hot at the time. You can be putting it together. A couple of players who were freshmen have grown it. There's so many variables to it that you just can't say, this isn't a team that can't make a run.
Let me, in the end. Okay, let's walk some things back for just a second, because I think everyone needs a little reality check. They're 17-4 right now. They lost 2, so they've lost to 4 teams, all of whom are in the KenPom top 42. Every single one of them happened away from home. If you remember, as far back as literally last year, they lost all 3 of these road games in a row: ASU, Arizona, and USC. This year they won one of them. And if you look at the next 10 games, the final stretch of the season, they're going to be favored in every single one of those games. Every single one, they're going to be favored. So just, you know, calibrate around that. They're going to go on a run, because they will, unless they massively collapse. But if your complaints, and I'm speaking now to the people out in Broland, if your complaints with the team are everything that's happened over the last month, well, in the last month, they're 5-2, and they lost to the 2 best teams they played. USC right now with Vince back and Arizona. They don't have to play USC again, and they don't play Arizona until the last game of the year. Yeah, could they lose at Oregon? Sure. Could they lose at Utah or at Colorado? Sure. Are they going to lose all three of those? Almost certainly not. They're probably going to go on like a, I don't know, at worst 8-2 run to end the year. I would guess probably 9-1. They're going to be in pretty good shape for a very high seed in the NCAA tournament. What we're talking about right now is what are the potential limiting factors for them being a title team? But this is a very good basketball team, notwithstanding two losses in a row to, you know, two of the best teams they've played in the last 3 months, Arizona and USC right now. They're still very good. They're going to be very good. They, of course, have potential to make a run. It's going to be dependent on them, you know, playing hard defense, but we've seen one game literally in the last, I don't know, what are we talking about here, since Thanksgiving? One game that they haven't played good defense, and that was last night. Every other game, it's been really good defense and then a question of whether or not they're going to hit shots.
And here's the thing about SC. I mean, as a team, from what we've seen of them, I've watched them play, I'd say, 8 times. You would say they're not very good, but they are really talented. If they put this together, they could be very good, especially with Iwuchukwu.
Yeah, he's a stud.
Oh, my, those turnaround baseline jumpers.
Free throw stroke, man. That's crazy.
A free throw stroke. I mean, Dembona has nothing in his repertoire like that.
Yeah.
I mean, Boogie Ellis can generally, if he wants to, seems like can make just about any shot when he's...
He can take any shot.
He can... What I'm saying, they have the talent to be able to beat anyone on a good night. It's not like they're not talented enough to do that. Like, there are teams that on a good night, they couldn't beat anyone in the country. SC can, especially with him. I mean, Dixon Waters, the last game, they had no one, UCLA couldn't, had no one who could defend him. They've got some, we're not even talking about our boy Peterson. So yeah. They're good. they've just played they've far underachieved so far this
season. Well, they've been hugely better since Ascent, again, kind of like UCLA since Thanksgiving. I mean, they lost at Wazoo, and if you remember, UCLA almost lost at Wazoo. They lost at UCLA, where they again had that insane second half where they almost came back and won it, but for Jalen Clark. And then they lost at Arizona. Their situation does not look all that dissimilar from UCLA's. It's just they have some bad things that they have to sweep under the rug from November that UCLA doesn't have. I mean, they've got the Florida Gulf Coast loss. They haven't blown out their opponents the way that UCLA has. But they're not bad. And they've gotten a lot better. They're probably going to be a tournament team now, thanks to beating UCLA at home. So this isn't the reason that after this game, UCLA didn't drop in KenPom from 4. They're still at 4. They didn't drop in the net. They're still at 5 is because it's a quad one loss. USC's pretty good. They didn't get beaten that badly. They lost by 13. It's not quite into the 25 range. Now, is it good? No. UCLA now only has a 1-game lead in the Pac-12. But they still have a 1-game lead in the Pac-12. And this is where I think people get like a little bit too hung up on want to win every game. Maybe it's like, you know, it's still January. You're still getting out of the football mentality where every loss is like, oh, God, you're done. Basketball teams lose games. This isn't the wooden era. You're going to lose.
They've lost 4 games.
They've lost 4 games out of 21. They're probably going to finish with something like 6 losses. That'll be Mick's best regular season at UCLA, in case anyone's curious.
And here's the major silver lining. Right now, which is foolish to say because this decision isn't being made right now, but no one's going pro early.
Yeah.
Right? Except Jaime Hawkett.
The Jalen Clark thing.
Jalen, let's talk about Jalen Clark. You go first.
All right. So I, as everyone knows, am the biggest Jalen Clark honk in history. He's in an insane offensive slump right now. When we were talking at the beginning of January about him, it was, wow, he's hitting a lot of his shots. His shot doesn't look great, but it's going in at like 37% from deep. He rebounds like a fiend. He's stealing the ball. You know, there's an avenue for him. He better hope nobody's watched January, because his touch around the basket's gone completely cold. It has infected his defense, especially in this last game. And it's hard to imagine the path for him to be anything other than, you know, a flyer free agent that they hope they can workshop on. But you have to be able to hit open shots at a much, much greater clip than he is right now.
There's also the element of, and the NBA definitely looks for this, they just, whether you're a guy who is going to rise to the occasion and step up. And right now, he's not that guy. We've seen him do that last year when they needed him, when people were hurt, and he did it. Right now, he's not that guy.
His passing has fallen off considerably.
If he just started playing decently the rest of the year, I don't think he would still be projected to even be drafted. Maybe second round, right?
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a draft guy. But if the same guys who started putting him in the end of the first round or early second round in December when he was playing really well actually watch the games right now, his my read on him as a prospect is, if you liked him before, all those same tools are still there, but I just don't understand how a team can draft what is a – Jalen Clark is a very good athlete. He's not Russell Westbrook level. He's very good. He's got great quickness, great anticipation, but he's not like super explosive. He's not that guy. So you're not getting a freak athlete. You're getting an NBA level athlete, but not a freak. And his skills have, I won't say eroded, but he's shown much greater flaws in his skills than he was showing through the first 2 months of the season. I know everyone has amnesia. In November and December, everyone, including us, we were talking about how good of a passer he was, how underrated he was as a passer, his natural feel for the offensive game. Is that recognizable with the player anybody is watching in January? I would say no. He's fallen back a little bit on being the rebounding guy, which is great. But his passing has been virtually non-existent. He has, 9 assists in January against 12 turnovers. This is not the guy we watched in November and December. And sure, some of it is the competition getting better. But against Kentucky and Maryland, he had 5 assists and 1 turnover. It's not just that. He's in a funk, like a really bad funk. And it'd be great to see him break out of it in a huge way in February and put himself firmly on those draft boards, because that'll mean UCLA in general is playing a lot better. But with the way he's playing this month, it's hard to imagine him being a draftable prospect after this year.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And then throw in, I mean, Amari Bailey, who missed, how many games did he miss? Six?
Seven, I think.
Seven? Right now, he's not a draftable guy. He's just not. Does he have some upside? Yes. I went back and watched some of his junior clips, junior and high school clips. He has lost some explosiveness, and it's really curious because usually when you see a, however much athleticism some kid has as a junior in high school, it's only going to get better when he becomes a real man. And he's not old for his age. So it's curious. We've attributed it to a couple of different injuries he's had since his senior in high school and then this year. I don't know if that's it, but I don't see him. He'd have to really blow up the rest of the season and in the tournament for him to even be draftable at this point. Adem Bona might be the most, among the three, you might think he would make some draft boards, but wow. I would, first, projected first round based on what we've seen right now, I would say no, probably second round. And as I wrote on the forum, if that continues, if that's his status, it's, you know, it's, there's a good shot that he ends up returning. I think among those three guys, there's a good shot at least two return. And I'm telling you, it is not out of the question that Tiger Campbell returns. We could go into all the details of why, but I'm just telling you, leave it at that. It's not out of the question. Let's just leave it there. So, I mean, that's kind of the silver lining. They're 17-4. They're going to be positioned to make a run in the tournament, I think. But the silver lining is not all of these guys that we assumed were leaving will, at this point, have just a clear path to be leaving and stay in the NBA draft. Will they put their name in the draft and test the waters? Probably yes. I would be surprised if Mick Cronin is going to wait around to June like he did with Jules Bernard. He's going to want his roster set.
Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, so much is going to depend on how they start playing. I mean, if Amari Bailey suddenly looks like a stud in February, I mean, looking at how he played last night, if they suddenly start starting him over Singleton or Clark, and he, you know, carries them to a 2 seed or a 1 seed, well,
right?
Who knows?
No. If that happens, absolutely. I'm saying that's an unlikely scenario that for Amari Bailey, given what we've seen, even pre-injury.
Totally.
Could happen, though. Yeah.
But I guess my point is all of these guys, we've seen it enough with UCLA over the years where somebody starts looking really good. Look, I mean, Johnny Juzang borderline almost decided to go after 2021, and he's barely an NBA player. You know, it's just you can get a lot of hype, and the draft evaluators are not perfect, and it's this thing that there's like a science to it. And all these guys are following the same guidelines, and they're all like, oh, we judge athleticism, but you need to make open shots. It's all bullshit. They're prone to the same fallacies that everyone else is. They're just pros at it, and so they're better than most people. But if a Dembona goes out there and, I don't know, they play Purdue in round three and he just crushes Edie despite having like a 7-inch disparity in height and he scores like 18 points and pulls down 12 rebounds, he's going to get drafted in the first round. He just will. And, you know, you'll just have to live with it because that probably means something good for UCLA. But so much of it's going to depend on how they actually play over the next month and a half. But right now,
is there is now a distinct possibility that some of these guys return. When before we were thinking, if you just projected them on what you thought how they would play, and given their each of their personal backstories that they would leave, I'm saying both of those things have changed.
Sure.
And that gets me talking a little bit. There was a slight development in 2023 recruiting. Brady Dunlap, 6'6", wing from Harvard Westlake, is getting out of his letter of intent to Notre Dame. I don't think he's gotten out yet. I think he only announced that he intended to. There's no reason to doubt that he wouldn't. Should UCLA take Brady Dunlap or not? It's an interesting question. I've been talking to various people about it. Mick Cronin went to see Harvard Westlake. When was it? Last Saturday, I think. No, I can't even remember. Went to see him this week, let's say.
I think it was like Wednesday.
Wednesday, yeah, that was it. He's 6'6", good shooter. Like, I'd say even a great shooter. Not just three-point shooter, but he has the length and ability to take it into the lane, pull up, and consistently hit that shot. Average athlete. People are saying he's just another Jake Kyman. He's not. I hate that kind of thing because that just puts him in some kind of box, and everyone's different. He's a better athlete than Jake Kyman. Not a great athlete, but a better athlete. He plays hard. He's a winner. I'm not advocating that they should take him. He is a shooter. It would be nice to have a shooter given what we've seen from this team this year. But then you're also thinking, if you want a shooter, you could possibly go out into the transfer portal and get an experienced shooter who could plug in. I mean, most freshmen have that learning curve of they don't just plug in and start shooting 40% from three, unless you're Grady Dick. So there's a lot to consider. He's easily a 3 to 4 year guy. His dad went to UCLA. They're UCLA people. He would want to be there. He's probably not going to make a decision for a long time. Just getting out of his NLI, he'll probably want to see what the situation is. What, you know, you don't want to jump into anything and maybe another coach, you know, is retiring or fired. So I could see him not committing somewhere for a while when he gets out of his NLI. So there's that, which is interesting to think about taking him or possibly a transfer who could supply that same role of what he does, but do it as, let's say, a junior or a senior. So that's all kind of interesting. One thing I have to say, too, Mick Cronin went out to watch Harvard Westlake when a 2024 guard, Trent Perry, had a spectacular game. He had a triple-double and looked really good. I would bet that Trent Perry has moved up on UCLA's 2024 recruiting board. 6'3", doesn't do one thing really well, but does a lot of things. I'm mixed on him right now. A decent athlete, not a great athlete. Not a point guard. More of a shooting guard. Has a nice shot. Can really shoot the ball. Put the ball in the basket. A good defender. Not fantastic. Like I said, decent quickness, a 3 to 4 year glue guy, in my opinion. A lot of programs already after him. Great kid, Harvard Westlake kid, good grades. So just to have that on your radar, that's something. I don't necessarily think he could get offered soon, but if there's a local 2024 kid who could get an offer, it would probably be him.
Well, that'd be good. You know, I think with the capriciousness associated with international recruiting at this point, and UCLA, keeping irons in the fire, especially with local kids, is, I think, critical. And they've done a good job of it.
Harvard-Westlake, too, is a good thing, because that's nice to create a pipeline there. They've got other guys, too. They've got the sophomore, Kamenya, who I really like. 6'8", essentially combo forward, mostly a power forward, skilled, really good passer, really knows how to play. And I know that the UCLA staff really likes him, too. So, I mean, that might – maybe Brady Dunlap also helps with the whole Harvard-Westlake thing. So, yeah, there's that. But if we're talking recruiting, Dave –
Oh, is this a transition? Should I play the music?
Do you have music?
No.
I was really excited, like you had created some little thing.
Transition.
Man. I like it, but I don't know if everyone else did.
It's okay.
Currently, UCLA is hosting an official visit, a transfer, a cornerback from Ole Miss, Davison Igbinosin, freshman All-American last year, as a true freshman, actually. A big-time impact player. Like I said, arrived on his official visit yesterday, Thursday and Friday.
Tracy, he took some pictures in I Los Angeles talk about that. And was excited about Los Angeles, so he's not coming ahead. To UCLA.
I just wanted to lay the groundwork. He's going to Ohio State for a day after that. Tennessee... If you've spent any time on our forum with all the links to Tennessee feels like they have him wrapped up because he's already
been admitted
into Tennessee.
I need to do that. Okay. No, sorry. Okay. I've been reading our message board too much, very clearly. However, I went to the Tennessee board to see what everyone was talking about. And literally within that thread, they're like, I don't know. I mean, guys get enrolled in the student directory all the time. Who knows?
All the time.
And the Tennessee mod is clearly like, we haven't heard this. Obviously, he's in the directory. They feel like, you know, they have a chance, but this doesn't mean anything.
Okay, good.
Nobody can find the source of the Ole Miss report, except the Ole Miss guy saying that he's going to Tennessee, except to say that it's some rivals dude who doesn't know anything, who's basing it off of the student directory the same way.
And that creates our forum going off on this crazed tangent. Which insane. That whole energy that then he starts putting up his Instagram photos of him posing in front of a Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
And everyone starts questioning whether he's a good fit, if he's just taking a trip, just to take a trip to LA. Oh my God.
Absolutely bonkers.
Bonkers. For one thing, guys, let's just remember this. Maybe we've all forgotten this. UCLA attracts one of its major attractions is to come to Los Angeles, Beverly Hills, the entertainment capital of the world, the glitz and the glam. That's – you want a kid who kind of – I mean, I know we all want just guys who are serious about football, but there can be guys who like all that glitz who are still serious about football. What UCLA used to recruit to and recruit well.
I truly do not understand any of it because, okay, one, he's attracted to the LA glitz and glamour. That's a positive. Two, he's a freshman All-American, which means he cares about football. Three, he's an honor roll student.
Two big points. Number one, he's already proven that he's – do you think he's going to come to LA and he'll just start going to all of these parties and he'll suddenly not be the same player he was as a freshman All-American?
I am baffled. Baffled.
And he has good – and he's good academic. This is – if you're looking for a recruit –
this is an ideal world.
This is the ideal guy. Yeah.
So anyway, I read that thread
yesterday.
If
he had acted like, oh, I like it back in Columbus, where it's minus 4 degrees. I don't know if I like this weather. Weather means nothing to me. Clearly, LA is an attraction for him.
And clearly it's high season for everyone being absolutely insane, me included. So I'm not, this isn't said with any judgment, but I read that thread yesterday and I was honestly, and this is something for our message board, I was blown away. I was absolutely blown away by how unhinged it was.
I was too. It was incredible. I tried to send it down the other way because the real takeaway here is 5 years ago, Chip Kelly on official visits wouldn't take the official visitors, the recruits, off campus for dinner. You have some of the best restaurants in the world, some of the glitziest.
And kept them to one day visits.
And wanted to keep it to one day. So now, if you're talking about a guy, let's give Chip Kelly credit. He has changed his tune. He is obviously signed off on this guy doing a photo shoot in front of a Rolls Royce. In a UCLA, that was in the Ziggy Marley, but later the one in the, he's wearing a UCLA jacket when he's in the elevator.
Yeah.
Chip Kelly, what's next? Seriously. Are we going to see Chip Kelly posing in front of
a
Rolls Royce with a big chain, like a big dollar sign chain around his neck?
Yeah. He's going to be taking the video like Brian Kelly, that video of him.
Oh my God. I swear that would be the capper of my entire career of doing this, if we could get Chip Kelly to do that.
Yeah. But anyway, hopefully they get him. He's very good at football.
Also, the
you
Oregon.
Absolute lovely people out there.
Yes. Honestly, is NIL going to be a factor? Yes. But good on you also, bro, stepping up.
Bro stepping up big time.
Yeah. And don't think that doesn't impact literally specific recruitments, because it definitely 100% does. Also, on campus tomorrow is the Oregon defensive line transfer, Keanu Williams.
Whoa.
Looking good for him, like I've been saying for a few weeks. Especially good. That he's coming down on his own dime. UCLA's running out of official official visits, by the way. They've used a lot. Coming down on his own dime, I would be stunned if there wasn't a boom. I wouldn't say stunned. I would be surprised if there was not a boom as a result of that. They have a few other unofficial visitors, 2024 guys, a couple of 2023 potential walk-on guys. Oh, we didn't. Did we talk about Kunta's commitment?
No.
Okay. Here's another thing. I wrote a headline that said it's a big commitment, and we got a lot of flack for that. An Old Dominion tackle. Why is this a big commitment? It's because the number one probably. Priority transfer portal before his commitment was absolutely left tackle. I mean, just to get a left tackle who's played in college football and started for 2 years and played against, you know, Coastal Carolinas of the world and done well is, you know, to get that guy. But then after watching him, he's pretty good. Like, I watched Raekwon O'Neal at the same time last year. And I have to say, you know, this guy looks all as good as Raekwon O'Neal did. And Raekwon O'Neal was solid at left tackle. So given the need, it is a big commitment. And I know there are plenty of guys out there that just don't want to give Chip Kelly some credit for all this. But that's a big commitment. Wouldn't you say, Dave?
Yeah, it's a big commitment. I mean, I think as a player, I mean, at minimum, they've got somebody who was going to be better than what they had on the roster. Because the idea of nobody out there watched spring at the level that we did, but just take our word for it. The idea of Garrett DiGiorgio having to slide back over to left tackle is terrifying. And getting a guy who has played that position and started at that position. I mean, he started all 12 games last year at left tackle, 8 games the previous year at left tackle, and 7 games the previous year. 6 games the previous year at left tackle. So he's played the position. He's played it for an FBS program. Old Dominion is now. So, yeah. I mean, is it getting the, you know, the best left tackle for Alabama? No. But is it getting a guy who can plug into that position and probably play it at least an average level? Yes. And that's actually huge. You got to take into account what is the alternative when you're thinking about especially transfer recruiting. This guy will plug in and start. What was the alternative? And if it's playing Garrett DiGiorgio and sliding somebody else into right tackle, this is better than that.
Getting a big commitment, and I'm using air quotes, is so dependent on, especially in the transfer era, on the immediate need and what that recruit, that need that he will fulfill. Getting a 4-star receiver who weighs 180 pounds and is probably at least a year from contributing, you could probably call that a big commitment and no one would complain. But no, that's that's not as big. That's at least, let's just say these two things are as equally big because of the need. So, yeah.
When you sign a starter, it's a big commitment.
Yeah.
And so,
at left tackle.
Is anyone saying that Kunta is the best prospect they signed? No. Nobody is saying that.
I'm saying Spencer Holstich is
maybe
the
very
best
very,
transfer.
Very, very possibly. But in terms of and again, in terms of the difference between him and what would have been taking place at left tackle without him, it's obviously significant.
We didn't have the opportunity to talk about Zeke Thomas.
Zeke.
This is really funny because UCLA football recruiting has moved into kind of a new era under Chip Kelly. And this is kind of a an echo of Chip Kelly's recruiting the first couple of seasons at UCLA. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
I mean, his other offers are various colleges of the mines.
Yeah, this is... So I'm confused about this one myself. Is this so? I saw the name Brian Norwood, the one who initially contacted him, and then Brandon Story. I mean, it sounds like he's pretty much locked in as soon as UCLA officially admits him. What do you think of this guy?
I mean, we. I'm all about the evaluation. I'm all about that you can find diamonds in the rough. But they're very, very, very rare. And this UCLA staff has attempted that various times to not a great hit rate, I'd say. I mean, if you're talking like John Gaines had an FBS offer, you know, a Power 5 offer. Hayden Harris, let's say he came from a big program in Washington. This is who is the JC? See, I lose the names. Who is the JC defensive lineman from San Diego area? 6'7" kid.
How long ago?
About 3 years ago. 2 years ago. Remember, played. He played a little. God, spacing.
Steve Mason?
That's, yeah. Was it Steve Mason?
Steven Mason?
Yeah. I think it's something along those lines. I just can't believe that they're going to find someone who will come in and is no one else spotted him, and he's going to come in and have a huge impact. And he has 2 years of eligibility. Left. 6'4", 200 pounds. Looks like a tweener between a safety and a linebacker. Maybe plugs in at that pseudo nickel linebacker role that UCLA, that everyone uses these days. Hasn't verbally committed yet, but from what I hear, he's just waiting on some academics. He'll finish up probably in February at College of the Sequoias and then probably enroll in time for spring quarter. Pretty much a done deal on that one, you could say. So that will be, I kind of maybe get it. Why, if you have some scholarships, let's roll the dice with a guy who's got some measurables. But I don't, from a fan standpoint, I don't think we can really realistically expect that much.
No, I wouldn't. Okay. Well, do we have anything else?
Well, I mean, there was a flurry of 2024 offers, just to bring that up, which is encouraging. The more high school players that UCLA offers, it's just, you know, good. It's a good thing. I know everyone will come away saying no Bill McGovern update. It's still pretty much where it was. It's going to come down to an assessment of Bill McGovern's capabilities to fulfill the role of defensive coordinator. Most of the people around the situation believe that he still will not be the defensive coordinator next year. But dang, given the situation, those parameters, anything could happen at this point, I'd say. But I'd still, given the information, I know the specifics, which I really just can't share. I still am coming down on the side that I don't think he will be defensive coordinator next year. And it could be, there could be some movement. I know people hate this because I say this and then it lasts longer because things change. Could be some movement, you know, within a couple of weeks of in February.
Okay. All right.
Is that okay, Dave?
That works for me.
Okay.
I think that was effective. I think it was succinct, and I think you nailed it.
God, I want to have you around all the time.
I'm a positive person. I bring positivity wherever I go.
Let's probably end this on, again, emphasizing Men of Westwood.
Give to Men of Westwood. Basketball and football.
You guys, the bros are doing well.
You bros are crushing it. The giving between whatever that was that Thursday?
Yeah. No, Wednesday.
Wednesday, yeah. And today has been profound.
Oh, I guess everyone wants to talk about Gary Bryant. He didn't show up. Now, like Greg Biggins said, and just so brilliantly elucidated on us all on this, it wasn't set in time. He just thought he might go up there Wednesday. He didn't. He never showed. Who knows what that means for UCLA's recruitment of him? I've been saying after they got Kyle Ford, it was probably unlikely. Gary Bryant would have to probably say no to a lot of NIL money from Arizona to choose to stay in Southern California at UCLA to play college football. Okay, just wanted to get that out of the way.
No,
but Men of Westwood, guys, doing well.
You're doing great.
Much appreciated.
You're doing great.
Not from us. I mean,
from others. We're conveying it on their behalf.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, for Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online, and we'll talk to you again next time.
See y'all.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.